I got a good one.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I call to order the meeting of the House Transportation Finance Committee for Thursday, March 23rd. We have a lot of work ahead of us today, and we're going to try and get it done in a timely fashion. We have a number of amendments to the bill, and we will run through those as quickly as we can and still give everyone a chance to address the issues at hand. So you should have the amendments in your packet. We're going to start with the A3 amendment. I'm going to change that, folks. I'm going to do the A19 first. The A19 is the author's amendment. And I would like to ask Mr. Burris to walk through the amendment. Okay, sorry. I was in too big a hurry. We have to get the DE on the bill first. Be a good idea. So first I will move the DE2 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. So I move the DE2 to House File 861. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill is amended as the author would like. Then we'll move on to the A19, which is the author's amendment to the DE2. And I would ask Mr. Burris to step through the changes in the A19. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, there are a variety of technical and clarifying changes as well as a few different policy adjustments. So I'll focus on the policy changes. The first of those is on 1.3. This reduces an appropriation to the out-of-the-state airports fund for airport development and assistance. So it would drop that down by a few million. The next couple of lines make some adjustments to appropriations for various airports projects, and it would have the effect of creating availability of funds for those projects for 5 years. And the current, in the DE language, there's availability of the dollars for a couple of different lengths of time. So this would create a consistency of how long those funds could be used for. Page 1, line 11 of the A19 amendment adds in Sky Harbor Airport for the appropriation to the Duluth Airport Authority. And I'll then move on to page 2, lines 2 and 3. This is a reduction in the general fund appropriation for the Mercy program. There's a corresponding increase that you'll see on 2.17 through 2.21. So this is a net no change to the general fund, but provides for an annual appropriations for tribal training to MnDOT as one-time appropriations. There are a couple other technical changes in referencing base appropriations, kind of peppered throughout the amendment. And then a cleanup on 2.24, identifying where funds are coming from for a rider. Also a cleanup item on the base appropriation of the Metropolitan Council in the tails for one of the years on 2.26. And then on page 3 of the A19 amendment, lines 3.2 to 3.6, add in a transfer, and this is funds that are coming from some of the sales tax revenues that first go into the Transportation Priorities Fund, and then this language would move that into the HUTD for the appropriations that are made earlier in the budget. Page 3, line 7 makes an adjustment to the fee for electric vehicles that's being established, reducing that from an $85 annual fee to $75. Page 3, lines 10 to 13 make an adjustment to the local bridge program $7 million cap, so it would allow for funding of projects at a higher than $7 million level if all of the projects that are below $7 million in the priorities list have already been funded. So if there are additional dollars, it could go above that $7 million cap. A little bit of clarifying language, and then finally there's on page 3.18 to 3.19 some additional specificity required in the reporting on efficiencies that's part of the major highway projects report that MnDOT puts together. And then, Mr. Chair, if there are any other questions on details, I'm happy to touch on those. One other thing I had skipped over is 3.17. This is a modification in the transfer that comes out of the Transportation Priorities Fund in an amount that reflects some of the bonding debt service from bonds that are authorized in the Article 2 of the bill. So this has the transfer go into the Trunk Highway Fund instead of into the State Bond Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is for Mr. Burris or maybe for the Department of Transportation, but I recall the conversation the other day about respecting limits on the indebtedness related to the Trunk Highway Fund. Do we know what this would do to those limits that are, is it like a 20% limit?
Well, the 20% guideline.
Yeah, does this violate that limit by chance? I don't know.
Mr. Burris or Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark Johnson, the MnDOT 20% guideline limit currently has about a window of about an additional $300 million in bond proceeds to get up to the cap. So in a sense, about $300 to $350 could be authorized without any new revenue and stay within the 20% limit. What this would do is, in addition to authorizing $300 million in additional trunk highway bonding, this would authorize an additional $1 billion in trunk highway bonding. However, the debt service needed to cover that $1 billion in additional trunk highway bonds would be coming out of, would be transferred from the general fund to the Transportation Priorities Fund to the Trunk Highway Fund. So it would be useful to get some discussion from MnDOT as to whether or not they would see that as applying towards their 20% limit. But the two factors to remember is, in a sense, if this was just essentially money into the Trunk Highway Fund and then transferred out to the for debt service, then it essentially would have a net zero impact on the limit. And in addition to that, the added revenue that's going into the Trunk Highway Fund from the HUTD would raise the 20% limit just by a factor of more state funds coming into the Trunk Highway Fund. So from those two sources, I believe that this would be still under the 20% limit.
Representative Johnson, a follow-up.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So I understand that this is kind of a fluid situation, and we heard earlier that the bonds would be let, I assume, as there's money available. But I also related that timing is the corridors of commerce bonding in here. This might be more a question for Representative Torkelson. How would that affect the timing on the corridors of commerce bonding if we're also doing the trunk highway bonding? Is there any guidance in the bill as to which would be done first?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark Johnson, the authorization in the DE amendment has $300 million authorized in fiscal year 2018 for corridors of commerce, and the $1 billion for state road construction spread out over 4 years, so $250 million authorized a year. Now, the authorization is not necessarily when the bonds are let. The bonds are only let when there's need for cash flow on projects.
Thank you.
Representative Hausman, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lee, so with this change, I had asked you, could we see 20 years out what the cash impact would be, but now we need to know what the 20 years out impact on the Trunk Highway Fund would be. You don't by any chance have a chart like that, do you?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, no, unfortunately, I have not heard back yet from MnDOT on the toll cash flow debt service needs for the either the $1 billion bonding or the $500 million bonding authorizations. However, I can tell you the four-year forecast window for both For the $1 billion authorized over 4 years in fiscal 18, there would need to be, and is currently written in the bill, there's a transfer to the debt service or to the Trunk Highway Fund of about $1.8 million for debt service in 18, $16.7 million in fiscal 19, $43.7 million in fiscal 2020, and $70 million in 2021. And you can see that this grows as more bonds are let to cover the debt service.
And so, Mr. Chair, just as I wish that I could have seen the 20-year table for cash, I wish we could see it for Trunk Highway. And because of having had that previous experience when we tried this, and that was we were going to borrow against federal money, and eventually we discovered there wasn't enough federal money coming in to pay that, the dilemma with taking it from the Trunk Highway Fund over 20 years, and the reason we have to have that number, is that eventually means after these projects are done, it will affect our ability to do maintenance on roads and, you know, any number of things, but we just don't know to what extent unless we see what the 20-year impact is going to be. So I somehow think, at least before it gets to Ways and Means, if we could get that. But, I mean, that is, if we're taking it now from the Trunk Highway Fund to pay for the borrowing, over time, it affects how much we're able to do everything else in that formula. It affects all of that.
Representative Hausman, I guess I'm a little confused by your question. We're using this general fund revenue to service some of these bonds, and trunk highway bonds will still be subject to the 20% guideline that they've always been subject to. So where is your concern?
Well, just to see, I mean, I checked with MMB this morning, and they said you do usually want to know what is the 20-year impact look like. I mean, what he just described is you see how that's an increasing number every year. It's just an issue of needing to understand totally what is going to be the impact on the Trunk Highway Fund.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hausman. We'll make every effort to get that information to you just as soon as we can. As soon as Mr. Lee has got a 20-year spreadsheet, we'll get that out to you post-haste. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And your last comment about we're using general fund money to service the bonds, is that so we're using general fund money to service the trunk highway bonds?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark Johnson, in a sense, the general fund money associated with certain transportation-related general sales taxes is being put into a new fund, which is then being transferred to the Trunk Highway Fund. So it's the Trunk Highway Fund that is servicing the debt, but there is a transfer to the Trunk Highway Fund, in a sense, to cover the debt service.
Thank you. Any other questions on the A-19? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Mr. Burris could just clarify again for me on Section 7, the dollars going from the fiscal funds and the changes that are there. Could you clarify for that for me again?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, that Section 7 was an oversight in establishing the new flow of funds. So in Article 3 of the DE2 amendment, the new sales tax dollars are reallocated, and all of those dollars go into the Transportation Priorities Fund. In the years of the budget, 18 and 19, the appropriations that are made in Article 1 are on the assumption that a portion of those Transportation Priorities Fund dollars are actually moved into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and then allocated out following the standard formulas that are currently in place. So the appropriations that are being made from dollars that are in effect come from the sales tax revenues are made in the traditional, out of the traditional funds, trunk highway, county state aid highway, municipal state aid street. this transfer gets the funds from the Transportation Priorities Fund into the HUTD. From there, it follows the usual formulas. Then I might note that in the base, in the subsequent fiscal years for the TAILS, that is driven by the language that's being established with the creation of the Transportation Priorities Fund and the formula for the percentage amounts. That's in Article 4 of the DE2 amendment.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other questions regarding the A19 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A19, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We'll then move on to the A3. This is, again, my amendment. I will move the A3 for adoption. The A3 amendment adds a study that was inadvertently left out of the bill regarding the 494-694 interchange that is a few miles to our east. Any questions on the A3? Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that new funding or just transferring some money that's supposed to be used for something else at MnDOT for this?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, this would be spending $250,000 out of the existing, I believe, program planning and delivery appropriation, so it would not be an additional appropriation.
Thank you. Any other questions regarding the A3? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The A3 is adopted. We'll move on to the A17.
I don't have.
This is I hope you're having better luck finding it than I am. Yes.
Is it 17-0262?
Yes, A17-0262.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson gets an assist.
Representative Howe to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this amendment does is currently if you are on a road with a solid yellow line, which means you can't pass, and you come up behind a bicycle, you legally can't pass the bicycle. So what this will do, well, if it's safe, you can. It allows you to pull out, cross that yellow line, and pass that bicycle. The one, Mr. Chair, I do have an oral amendment on lines 2.3. Instead of 4 feet, it should be 3 feet.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, I have page 2, line 3. Delete 4 and insert 3. That is something that could be incorporated into the amendment.
We'll vote on the oral amendment to the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Your amendment is amended. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that would be the amendment, Mr. Chair and committee, is that basically it would. If it's safe, it would allow you to pass a bicycle instead of maybe staying behind that bicycle for miles and miles, and it's not good for anybody.
Any questions to the A17-0262? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A17 is adopted. On to the A4, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, what this amendment would do on page 90, it's the section 85 talking about Met Council's the indemnification of the railroad in the co-located corridor, and it would strike that first paragraph A, which appears to somewhat needlessly give a lot more power to the Met Council. And I guess I'm not certain why they would need that power. It would appear that this enables them to build and operate freight rail facilities. And I'd be very interested in knowing what the purpose of it is, first of all. But I think it's not needed. They have very broad, their enabling statute is very broad. They have tremendous powers, and this would appear to expand those powers. And it does not, I think, change the intent and the point of the legislation itself.
I think you're asking for more information from the Met Council. Is that correct, President Runbeck?
Mr. Chair, I think that would be very helpful.
Is a representative from the Met Council available to testify to this amendment? Welcome to the stand. Please identify yourself for the record.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Judd Shetland with the Met Council. And regarding the language that Representative Runbeck is speaking to, I just want to clarify to the committee that the Met Council, this is not our language. We're not asking for this. This, I believe, is part of maybe House File 2229. I am not sure, Mr. Chair and members. But however you want to read it, as far as additional authorities to the council, if you're interested in making some changes to this or taking it out, this is not something that the Met Council has brought forward and is seeking as part of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. You are correct. This is part of 2229 that has brought up a number of questions, a part of the bill that I've guaranteed that I will continue to work on to clarify the language. Ms. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Shetland. I think it's troublesome, and I think that it's something we need to work on and gain more understanding of then, what its purpose is. But if the end result is to give more power to the Met Council, I don't think that's where we want to go.
Mr. Chair, I may be able to explain a little bit more here. So what this is allowing for is a public entity that is looking to contract with the council that is a railroad of some sort. The way I understand the language to work is that it allows the Met Council and this railroad to come into some sort of agreement related to liability, related to if there's co-location in that area. And so what my understanding is that this language is just allowing that to happen. And I'm going to have to let the chair or others speak to this, but I know that the intention of what the bill does is to make sure that if there is co-location, that there is a liability limit for those railroads if there is an accident caused by the light rail transit in that corridor. And if there is not an accident, if there is an accident that's caused by the railroad, that is the responsibility of the railroad. But if it is caused one way or another by the light rail transit being in that corridor, then what this bill is trying to do, or this language is trying to do, is to limit the liability of the railroad.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would ask to be indulged that there be time, not in this meeting. I will withdraw the amendment, but I urge us to sit and work on this and make sure that there's a necessity, a real necessity to do this. So if you would
thank you
honor
Representative
that, Runbeck, I would appreciate it.
Representative Runbeck withdraws the A4 amendment. Would you still like to speak to it, Representative Hornstein?
Well, no, thanks. I mean, I was just going to, I'd be fine with the amendment. I just wanted to remind the committee that the amendment doesn't really do anything to the underlying issue that I have with this, and I think others share, which is capping liability for freight rail in this corridor. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We'll move on to the A11. Representative Runbeck.
Okay, where's that? Oh, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is simply making further clarification that the study that is conducted to find out more about why our highway construction inflation, the cost inflation, is so much greater than other states, that we have a very clear definition of what we're looking for. Whoever does the study needs to have to be very clear on what the issue is here. So that just clarifies it.
Representative Runbeck moves the A11. Any questions to the A11? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A11 is adopted. We'll move on to the A9. Oh, we did the A19. A16, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this looks a little bit more complicated than what it is, but understanding the differences between what you can use bonded dollars for versus cash dollars, and understanding that Corridors of Commerce, having pretty much done most of the shovel-ready projects, there is a need for cash to come into Corridors of Commerce. So basically, in a nutshell, what this does is it just swaps $50 million that would be bonded for Corridors of Commerce and swaps it with $50 million over the biennium from the sales tax exemption. It doesn't change over the biennium the amount of dollars going anywhere. It just makes that of the $300 million that are bonded, $250 million goes into Corridors of Commerce and $50 million of cash goes into Corridors of Commerce. It really allows for projects to continue forward that need those dollars for engineering and right-of-way purchase.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions to the A16? Seeing none, Representative Petersburg moves the A16 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A16 is adopted. Thank you. Representative Howe to the A18.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A18 is actually a combination of two bills that were heard by the committee that need to be placed in the omnibus bill because some problems in the other.
We don't talk about them, Representative.
I wasn't going to name them by name, but anyway. So anyway, what it does is it talks about the Head Start buses, and if it's not equipped as a school bus, it must be painted in a different color other than National School Bus Yellow. It also says that it deletes the piece that says these rules must be part of made by a contract by reference. The problem is it's not always there, and then they believe it doesn't apply to them, so we're going to delete that and make sure that it applies to all contracts. And then the other piece of this then is the part where it talks about if an operator of a Type 3 vehicle whose license is suspended or revoked or canceled or disqualified basically says that business day immediately following the day the operator received the notice of suspension, they need to notify their employer. So that's basically what this does. It just places it from the general registry on into the omnibus bill. And that is the amendment of answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions to the A18 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Howe moves the A18 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A18 is adopted. The A9, Representative Howe.
9? I got the 9 too? Holy smokes.
Hang on tight, Representative Howe. We're moving fast.
Oh. All right. Mr. Chair, I move the A9 amendment. What it does is it increases the penalty for those that fail to stop for a cross the school bus arm, or if they fail to and they pass a school bus where they're attempting to load or unload children.
Thank you, Representative Powell. You know, when you skip huddle, sometimes you're not fully prepared.
Scheduling seems to be an issue in my life. I will admit that, Mr. Chair.
Members, just to clarify a little bit, this refers to the Erdahl bill that we heard in committee, and I believe it's clarifying language that changes the effective date. Mr. Burris, would you care to make sure that I'm saying this right? And because Representative Howe and I seem to be a little bit lacking in speed.
Mr. Chair and members, indeed, this reflects language that is in a bill that had been heard in committee. The main effect is raising the the fine level. It would go into effect August 1st.
Very good. Any questions to the A9? Seeing none, Representative Howe moves the A9 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A9 is adopted. Thank you. Next, the A10, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A10 amendment. And this amendment helps bring guidance to MnDOT's project selection process both inside the metro area and outside the metro area in relation to corridors of commerce.
Any questions to the A10? Representative Hausman.
I'm just trying to recall, Mr. Chair, did we ever hear this as a separate bill, or is this a new thought?
Representative Hausman, I don't think we did hear this as a bill. Representative Lucero, would you care to elucidate?
That's correct. This was not a separate bill, but this was language that was heard last year and included in that omnibus bill.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd speak out against this amendment. My concern is it might surprise you. I've got half an eye out for Highway 14. That's maybe news today, but I think this would negatively impact construction of Highway 14. There's two sections that need to be completed. One is from Nicollet to New Ulm, and that has not received corridors of commerce funding before, so it would not be eligible for these funds. And the stretch that's in Steele County needs to actually be moved, so it's not only an expansion, so it's doubtful whether the corridors money would be available there as well. So I would encourage a no vote on this amendment.
Representative Johnson, I just want to make sure you're noting that the amendment does have two sections, one for Metro and one for outstate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm just referring to the part of the amendment where it reflects the criteria for the outstate. I also have a concern that, you know, we've spent a lot of discussion in this committee about criteria for corridors of commerce. The OLA has weighed in on it. I'm one who, I guess I'm a strict constructionist. I believe in going with what's currently in statute serves us well. This is problematical for a road that I care deeply about, and so I can't support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a couple things. This is fairly sweeping policy. I know it was incorporated last year, but I do have concerns. I mean, some of these other amendments were not controversial, and we'd heard them before. So this is. This is pretty major stuff, and I would echo what Representative Johnson said. I mean, we've spent a lot of time properly, Mr. Chair, in looking at the legislative auditor's critique of the Corridors of Commerce program. We've spent time with, Representative Whalen had some extensive hearings on looking at criteria. And I think that, you know, when I look at this, particularly, you know, and as a Metro legislator, I'm looking at 15 through 23, and to say that we can't consider a project in Greater Minnesota that wasn't previously considered, you know, is going to, I think, impact a lot of projects. And we want to stick to the criteria. We want to improve the criteria. We want to clarify the criteria. But this is fairly sweeping, and I think is going to exclude a lot of people. So I have real serious concerns about it as well.
Thank you. Any other? Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to address the remarks there, it would not eliminate projects. It just makes those that were previously funded a higher priority. So there are projects that haven't been funded before that still would be eligible.
I have concerns about that, Mr. Chair. I would want a roll call on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. A roll call has been asked for. Representative Salk.
One of my concerns here is along the idea of what the public thinks is, and then all of a sudden if there's something like this that sort of in some way causes doubt as to whether their reliance on the fact that these corridors for commerce are spoken to, have been addressed, are in a priority to get taken care of. I know that particularly in my area, the status of Highway 14 rises to like the highest level of concern, that it is in queue, that funding is appropriately available, and that it's in the intention of it to happen is there. And so the fact that these things come in are a bit murky, and then one would wonder, is the project that we value so highly, is it still in there? Is it being addressed? Is it moving in its priority? That doubt set is what I find very concerning. So if you can make it really clear that I can go away feeling confident that the Highway 14 Corridors for Commerce projects are as secure after this as they were prior to all of this, that would help me a lot, and I think that it would cause the public in our area to have a lot more confidence also.
Thank you, Representative Salk. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I'm going to weigh in just a little bit in here, because how I read this is that when we're dealing with Corridors of Commerce money, at least, and in the bottom section after 1.15, it talks about that the projects that have already received some funding are the ones that are going to stay up at the higher priority. And the reason why I think that has some value is that in the past, Highway 14 has been funded, and then all of a sudden it keeps dropping down on the list. And I think it's appropriate for us to say, when we start planning a project and we think the project is worthwhile for right-of-way purchase and getting it expanded, that we don't, just because some other project may have more people involved or whatever, all of a sudden that comes to the top rather than the one we already started. A knee-jerk reaction of starting and stopping projects also becomes very costly. And so I think this is one way that this really helps in getting the department to say, once we start a project and so forth, it's going to stay up in the top regardless of whether or not part of it's been done, and so therefore it's not as valuable. So I read it maybe a little bit differently, that I think this amendment actually promotes staying and keeping the projects that have started up at the top of the list. That's how I read it.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I support this amendment, because if you look at Highway 23, and if you remember Representative Erdahl's little video of that semi going past that school bus, that was a school bus from my district. And that's exactly at the place where Highway 23 goes from four lanes to two lanes. This is a safety issue. When we start a project, we need to finish the stinking thing. Excuse me for my verbiage, but that's just what I feel. So we need to complete the project, because otherwise it's a big safety concern.
Thank you, Representative Howe. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Howe, you know I agree with you that we absolutely have to do this, and we have to do it across Minnesota. And frankly, $300 million is inadequate to get very far on that. And that's a big disappointment with a larger bill. But specifically to this amendment, again, the Highway 14 Partnership is concerned about this, because they read it the way I read it, that it would negate funding for the section from Nicollet to New Ulm, and it would put in jeopardy the funding in Steele County. And I think, so therefore, I oppose the amendment. I'm agreeing with my neighbors along Highway 14.
Well, thank you, Representative Johnson. We're apparently having a disagreement about the effect of this amendment. In my mind, it actually improves the chances for projects that have been previously funded, and Highway 14 has been previously funded. And I don't want to take a lot more time on that, but maybe we should have an arm wrestling match to see who loves Highway 14 more. Because you know I love it a lot. And I have a little extra power because I have a little extra weight in my hand. Is that so?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point is, I think that really Representative Johnson and myself are really asking for a specific assurance as to how it should be read. That kind of clarity is what we're looking at, because I've shared before with the committee how almost nonsensical the public views this idea of that project having so many places where it has started, stopped, little done here, little done there, and a hole left here, and that kind of thing. It seems outside of cognizant continuity. But the point is, if we intend that to be the case, can't we make that like black and white clear, so that there isn't any like reading differential between, well, I read it this way, or the other people read it the other way? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Salk. excuse me. We have a we're going to have to move on. A roll call has been asked for. Chair votes aye.
Petersburg?
Aye.
Hornstein?
No.
Baker?
Aye.
Barr?
Aye.
Bernardi?
No.
Daniels?
Aye.
Jaskowski?
Aye.
Gunther?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Howe?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Keel?
Aye.
Kosnick?
Aye.
Lucero?
Yes.
Mason?
No.
Miller? Nelson?
No.
Rarick?
Yes.
Rosenthal?
No.
Runbeck?
Aye.
Salk?
No.
Sundin?
No.
There being 13 ayes and 9 nays, the amendment is adopted. The A13, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A13 amendment. And members, what this does, if you're familiar with Highway 35 as it's going south past Forest Lake, and it at one point splits to 35E, 35W, apparently there is a way station there that MnDOT wishes to upgrade and make more operative. But it's a safety issue because the trucks off of there have to, first of all, exit, and people are traveling 70 miles an hour. And as they then re-enter the freeway, they have to cross several lanes to actually get over to 35E. So we're just asking that there be a safety study conducted so that everyone's really certain that this is the best idea. It does seem like that we might want to rethink it. So it's just asking for a report.
Thank you. I don't know if the department is prepared to testify to this today or not. It's come with rather short notice. Representative Hausman, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just an observation. I'm looking at the department's original letter to us in which they point out in the bill there are 6 new reports and studies and 2 expanded reports. MnDOT already currently produces over 30 statutorily mandated reports. So I'm thinking every time I see they must submit a report and it must include analysis of, et cetera. It's just one more of and we think they magically appear with no staff time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Representative Hausman. I don't think that myself. I've looked at recently at that list, and we're probably overachieving a bit, but this does seem to be a genuine safety concern. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. We've actually studied this situation quite a bit and agree that it's probably not the ideal place for a way station, but given the options that are available on the north side of the metro to have a way station to enforce truck weight regulations and truck safety regulations, we continue to believe this is the right location. We have obviously worked with the community and law enforcement officials and the Department of Public Safety, and part of the plan for the reconstruction includes a longer entrance ramp so that when trucks come out of the way station they have a longer time to accelerate and merge in with traffic. And we've also reached agreement with the Department of Public Safety that we won't operate the way station during peak traffic periods so that there's so it will minimize the impact or potential impact on safety, and so during non-peak times there's typically at the end of the ramp plenty of opportunity for trucks to merge to the left if they need to.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Do you know approximately how far it is from the end of that entrance ramp to how much distance the truck would have to get over to the left in order to take Highway 35E south if they're leaving that way station?
I think I do. You just give me a second to find it on my phone.
I will happily give you a second, Mr. Peterson.
So from the very end of the entrance ramp, there's a half mile between that and the very beginning of what they call the nose, so where the striping starts to indicate the separation of the freeways.
Mm-hmm. So a truck entering the freeway at less than freeway speeds would have to finish getting up to speed and then make across how many lanes of traffic to get over to 35 East South?
I don't know how many lanes.
At least two, anyway, I would think.
My understanding is that the length of the acceleration lane allows trucks to at least approximate freeway speed by the time they get into the regular traffic lanes.
Thank you. Other questions regarding A13? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
A13 is adopted. Next, the A21. I will move the A21 amendment. The A21 amendment deals with Southwest Light Rail in the area in the Kenilworth corridor, where it passes the Calhoun Isles property. I have seen this spot. It's quite narrow. They're going to be driving pilings in that location. And Representative Hausman, this is another study, I'm afraid. But it seems to be a very timely need. Representative Dibble, I understand, is supporting the Senate side. Any questions regarding the A21?
Thank you for carrying this. I think there are some questions that need to be answered in terms of engineering around this property and in this area of the corridor. So I appreciate your carrying this amendment.
Thank you for sharing. It's noted that Dakota County is missing from the list of counties. I would make an oral amendment between Anoka and Carver to add Dakota. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, so I have amending the A21 amendment. Page 1, line 19, after Carver, insert Dakota.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. To the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted, or the amendment is amended. Representative Runbeck, do you have a question? Well,
Mr. Chair, I understand that there's that the residents of that condominium have been considering a lawsuit, and I don't know if there's any news on that, because I think it's 2 feet from their foundation and very concerned about structural damage to that facility. I think 174 condominiums. And I wonder if there's any
Thank
update.
You. Thank you, Representative. That's exactly why we want to do the study.
Right.
Other questions?
I wonder if Representative Hornstein might have an update.
I've met with the residents and have been in contact with them. I don't know for sure what additional action they're considering or taking, but I do know that they feel strongly that there's a need for some additional consideration of engineering, and I think that's what this amendment is attempting to do.
Any other questions to the A21? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A21 is adopted. Finally, we have the A15, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment narrows the operating cost expenditures to the counties to basically current law.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Any questions? Or
looking at Mr. Lee, that might not be totally accurate, I guess. I was looking at something else. Hold on a second.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, current law states that the state shall pick up half the operating costs for light rail transit, and in practice, the Metropolitan Council has also used state sources to cover half the net operating subsidy after fares and other funds of other transitway projects. So that is, for example, the North Star meter rail line and BRT lines. And then in practice, the County's Transit Improvement Board has covered the other 50% of the net operating share.
Anything else to your amendment, Mr. Representative Kosnick?
Could you support?
questions to the A-15? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The A-15 is adopted. Thank you. That's all of the amendments. I will now move the House File 861 as amended to be re-referred to the Tax Committee to the bill. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, just a question. This came, this was from the from MnDOT's letter that they gave us about the Red Wing project, and it said, so it says it's an earmark for a specific project, and I sort of remembered your saying there are no earmarks in the bill, and then they said it would require the department to spend more on this project than it has agreed to. What we're singling out one for a little extra love and care here? Do we know what the issue is? I can't remember if we heard a bill on this.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. We did hear the bill. They were in committee and testified to the bill. This is a situation where the project was, the way the project was implemented was changed midway through the project, and they went to concrete instead of asphalt, which significantly raised the cost of the project. The city feels that that was imposed on them improperly, and they are looking for restitution. I would not classify this as an earmark. Other questions to the bill as amended or remarks? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this isn't a question, but this is a comment on the bill.
Of course.
And my concerns with this, first of all, you know, I guess I will say, and this is very genuine, that I've enjoyed working in this committee. I like the way this committee operates, and I think that portends well going into the future. I also, Representative Torkelson, really appreciate your comments that you see this as a start, because I think it is a start, but it certainly is not a finish. And the finish in transportation needs to take the long view, and I appreciate that you've taken that 10-year view in this bill. And that needs to be done, because in the world of building roads and bridges, it takes time. And it takes a long time, as our friends in New Ulm have waited more than 50 years for four lanes, and it just takes a long time. The problem is that I'm not so sure that we have the long-term solution that we need. Fundamentally, that this bill, by choice, puts the construction of roads and bridges in direct competition with the funding for schools and vital human services. And I could name a bunch of basic funding for schools, for just fundamental per pupil funding, and I think we're seeing that actually in this session. Or just human services. I think about, if you need examples, where I live, the staffing that's needed at the security hospital, which is at risk with this. Or the pay that personal care attendants across Minnesota absolutely need. It's expensive. And the choice of this bill, or the approach taken in this bill, is by choice, put that in competition with that. And fundamentally, I just don't think that's healthy for Minnesota. I know it's not healthy for where I live. Furthermore, I don't ever recall anybody coming to this witness stand, whether it would be this year or any of the 4 years I've been on this committee, and saying, yes, we think it's good policy for roads, funding for roads and bridges to compete with schools and human services. I don't recall. Maybe I forgot. But I don't recall anybody coming here and saying, yes, that's good public policy. Yet that's the public policy that's embedded in this bill. I did, however, hear, and I had for 4 years, and just yesterday we heard, the need for constitutionally dedicated funds, new constitutionally dedicated funds. I've heard that from countless testifiers over the last 4 years. And maybe for me, more importantly, that's what I hear at home. And particularly, I live in a growing area. The Mankato area is growing. There's opportunity up and down that 14 corridor. There's so much economic opportunity there that we're kind of walking away with if we don't do this right. And we understand that we need new constitutionally dedicated funds that we can count on in order to take it full advantage of a corridor in rural Minnesota that can really grow and develop. I'm further concerned, that's just for the, you know, the accessing the general fund for the off the sales tax on auto parts, but I'm also concerned about the extensive borrowing. If we borrow now, instead of making the commitment, when we have a surplus, when we have low gas prices, when there's opportunity, when there's prosperity in the state of Minnesota, when we have that opportunity, we walk away from that. Instead, this bill also chooses to borrow extensively. I'm pretty conservative about borrowing in many ways. And to do that here, I think, will actually put even more extensive pressure on this funding competition as we go forward. As those bonds become due, there will be more intense pressure that grows over time, because we are choosing to borrow today instead of paying for our roads, I think, in a more mature way. What it fundamentally does is it puts future legislatures in there. They will face some real draconian decisions. I came here in 2013. Let's remember back the decade before 2013. My memory on that decade was cuts after cuts after cuts, borrowing from schools, deficit after deficit after deficit. It happens, and it's only reasonable to assume that shall also happen in the future. And so when those deficits come, when the economy turns down, the economy will almost inevitably turn down. I think that's not a bold prediction. That's just the state of things. There will be really difficult decisions over the competition between road funding and services. So that's my fundamental problem with it. I have another problem with it, and that is the funding for corridors. I gave this speech reminds me of one of my first speeches I gave in a committee, and Chair Hornstein, as a member of the majority, I took on the transportation bill we were passing because it was so unsatisfactory because it was not a long-term solution. Within that bill, we had provided $300 million for the corridors of commerce, the same as this bill. And I took that on, too, because when I talked about that $300 million, we talked about it as a down payment on the corridors of commerce. And so in so many ways, this $300 million is another down payment. The need for corridors of commerce money for that expansion that we need in rural Minnesota to really do what we need to do, to allow the economic development that is just, there's a kinetic energy to it that we're stifling without providing the infrastructure needed, will not be touched by that. I see Representative Baker stepped out, but I really align myself with Representative Baker's needs in the city of Willmar. I've been to Willmar. I'm impressed with Willmar as a city that has a lot of energy and a lot of potential for a lot of growth and a lot of development and important jobs for people. I see that in New Ulm, my neighbor to the west. I like to say this, let's give New Ulm a four-lane road and see what they really can do. New Ulm's a remarkably energetic city, but we're not taking full advantage of their potential because they do not have a four-lane road out of that town, which is amazing to me. And yet only $300 million does not provide for me, that provide Minnesota the kind of funding we need to develop corridors across the state. Particularly, when I'm at home, I say, if I'm going to support a transportation bill, I need to see a pathway to completion to Highway 14. And absolutely, I do not see a pathway to completion of Highway 14 in this bill. And so that alone makes it really difficult to support a bill like this. Again, New Ulm has worked for more than 50 years to get this done, and we are now walking away for the next 10 years to providing them the support they need to have the infrastructure they need. Finally, I'd like to mention that as a rural member, I really have found throughout this session the assault on Metro Transit to be fundamentally wrong. I'm a Minnesotan, and I'm proud to be a Minnesotan. And I'm so proud of I live in North Mankato, I think you all know. I love my hometown. I deeply love the area that I represent. But I love the whole state. I love where my tree farm is up in Wadena County, but I love wherever I enjoy going to Willmar, and I love the Twin Cities. And so do my neighbors. And it just seems fundamental to me that Metro Transit is really basic to the development of the Twin Cities. I was really struck by the testimony the other day. When we had folks here who ride transit, I ride that transit too. I rode it this morning. And, you know, it, some of the comments, you know, talk about the livability of transit for folks. When I see people carrying their groceries on transit, their kids, there's almost always, when I get on the train in the morning, there's almost always a mother that has a baby in a stroller. And this is how she's getting her child to daycare. I don't know. She's going someplace with her baby, maybe taking her to her folks' house or whatever. But it's really fundamental to the life here. And the assault on transit in the metropolitan area really does those folks wrong. And it was clear yesterday in the testimony. But I've also talked about the value of a vibrant Twin Cities. I think if we analyze closely and think about the role of the Twin Cities for us in rural Minnesota, it's things like going to a Twins game. It's also likely where our kids or grandkids live. It's also a place that provides a lot of economic energy and pays a whole lot of taxes in this state from which we benefit in rural Minnesota. We need a vibrant Twin Cities. And I think what's been ignored in this discussion about Metro Transit has really been the need for vibrant Twin Cities, and I think fundamentally that is connected to an effective transit system. I'm unaware of any vibrant metropolitan area in North America that does not have a modern transit system. So again, the competition with schools and the competition with basic human services that is the choice of this policy that we've never heard testimony for is a deep problem. The lack of funding for the corridors and then the assault on transit in the Twin Cities, which has ramifications, I think, for the entire state. Therefore, I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can just say what he said. And I'll just add just one little bit more about the last point that he made. The bewilderment that some of the people who were sitting up here had about why is this happening? The business community couldn't understand it because they look at their economic competitors all across the country, and they see all of them investing in transportation alternatives for a number of reasons. One, because people choose it because they desire a different lifestyle, and they're the workers that those businesses are hoping for. Others, because they either can't afford a car or because of medical or other issues aren't able to drive. And so they all sat there yesterday and told the story so well. But what I heard underlying was a sort of a bewilderment. Why are we different? What is wrong right now in our thinking in Minnesota? And that was the thing that I think I felt most keenly and remembered through the course of the day yesterday. The confusion that the public has as they watch the decisions we are making in this bill around transportation alternatives, and particularly public mass transit. So that would just be an add-on to everything Representative Johnson said.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, some comments. From the size of the legislation, I know a lot of work has been done on this, and I really do appreciate all that work. And given the fact that last session we didn't get out transportation, bonding, or a tax bill, we knew that we had a lot of catch-up to do this year, not to mention that the feds have been raising the interest rates, so it makes our job even more difficult as we're progressing. But over the things, time, I mean, it's been pointed out time and time again, MnDOT has been not been getting the money that has been needed for decades. And again, I'll repeat, when I was on the Egan City Council, I mean, we would have to upfront money for the state so we could get the roads that we needed. And I served on both the Park Commission and the City Council during a time of tremendous growth. So I know what it means to try to get money and get the roads to address the issues of the people that are there right now. And MnDOT has been, you know, their projects are put off for 20 years. Most of us can't wait for 20 years. I mean, the people are there now. So we need to be going a heck of a lot further. And I do want to mention some comments that were made yesterday that I kind of took offense at. Dakota County is doing a lot of expansion right now. And again, they're going through the same things that my city went through years ago. They need roads. They need the roads right now. And I think yesterday a comment was made that there was an agreement in 2008 about the reason that the counties were getting the motor vehicle lease money was because of a deal with the transit, but that's not true. Originally what happened, if you remember, it was supposed to be a half-cent tax. The quarter cent was supposed to be for transit, a quarter percent for roads. Dakota County runs on roads. We don't have rail. And for those of you that have been noticing my comments, I've been sticking up for rail big time here. That's because I believe in a one Minnesota transportation policy. But my county, we need money for roads. And again, so that that extra half quarter cent was not attached to transit. The motor vehicle tax was so that they had money for roads. They still need roads. I mean, we don't have many east-west roads in Dakota County. And I don't think the state has any projects for Dakota County. So that means my county has to come up with the money. So, again, we need a whole lot of money for an area that is doing tremendous expansion. And, again, we're trying to do the best we can. We're trying to get transportation out there. We have jobs out there. Our transit station, transit systems, they're trying to get people out there to the jobs. That's pretty important, folks, as well as the people that go from my district into the cities. So I think from a number of years, we've been working on a partisanship, and I would like to see that continue. When I was on the city council, I can tell you, I used to come to the legislature advocating for Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, the Suburban Transit Authority, just to get money to get some movement out there. And granted, we may not have the density right now, but there is, and there will be more people out there. And it's a heck of a lot easier to build systems where you do it before the actual development occurs. I can tell you, it's really tough to get trails, it's to get sidewalks, to get the bus routes in after everybody's there. If we were doing our job, we would be going down 20 years beforehand rather than what we've been doing this year is undermining work that has been done over the last 10 years. And again, I think Representative Johnson did such a good job of saying we're taking money from the general fund. None of us wants to do that. We've got homeless. We've got affordable housing issues. We can't afford to take money from general fund. We need new funding. So again, there are good things in here. There's a lot of good things in the bill, but there's so much work that needs to be done. So at this point, I will be voting no and hope we can do a lot better before it goes forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I believe in roads and bridges and transit all over the state. And I'm kind of bewildered about light rail and bus rapid transit that gets eviscerated in this bill, and especially the Southwest Light Rail, which we heard testifier after testifier yesterday from the Chamber of Commerce to businesses, the coalition of businesses. We are the driver, the economic driver in this state, and we spend a lot of money that goes out of our community into your communities, and we're okay with that. What we're not okay with is being told that we're going to choke your growth and your prosperity in order to kill something that has the highest fare box recovery of any form of transit out there. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. We heard yesterday there's going to be 80,000 new jobs along this corridor. We could add a lane to Highway 62, wouldn't even touch the problem. So I'm really, really disappointed in this bill. I'm also disappointed that, you know, I'm glad you got your study for 494, 694 interchange, but I had a bill for 494 35W interchange, which was not heard, which was the 17th worst in the nation. And so I think it's just amazing that as you want to choke the development that ultimately goes to fund projects in your district. And I think it's wrong, and I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. Representative Horstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And no, I know this isn't necessarily our last meeting of the session, but it's in a sense a capstone meeting, so it's a chance to pause and thank our incredible staff. It's amazing what you always do, Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris, and it's been wonderful to get to know and work with Ms. Peter and Mr. Marvel. This is our second session together, and you've done great work. And Mr. Chair, it's been great to work with you too. We've had our disagreements, and we'll continue to do so. But I would echo Representative Johnson in saying, you know, that we've had a good committee, and transportation has generally been a bipartisan issue, and I think we've had good exchanges, civil exchanges, even through our disagreements. But we do have profound disagreements, and I would echo what my colleagues have said about the disappointment in this bill. First and foremost, we really lack the dedicated funding source that we need to move forward. And taking money from the general fund, taking money from schools and seniors and nursing homes, it's all the things we fund in the general fund for transportation is just simply short-sighted and is not going to move us forward. You know, the first time we're in decent economic times now, not great, but good. We have a surplus, but, you know, the minute things go south, all of this funding is going to be very vulnerable. And so we had speaker after speaker yesterday, for whether it was the business community, the public sector, some of the advocacy organizations, over and over talked about the need for dedicated, stable, reliable funding. We don't have that in this bill when we rely so heavily on the general fund. I thought Ms. Brydeck from the contractors made a really good point about how the very people that we rely on to build our roads, to respond to the bids, to hire the workers, to do the work, those contractors, they're the ones that need most that long-term stability. Thus, as we all know, with all of the different projects, and you know this, Mr. Chair, from chairing this, I think every transportation finance chair knows, we can recite in our sleep all of the projects that people want. And it doesn't; these projects don't just happen overnight. 5, 10, 20 years of planning and implementation. So these contractors need that certainty. They're not getting that certainty in this bill. So while I think there's talk that this is new money, it's not really new money. It's shifted money. And it's money that we're running up on the credit card. And I also want to echo some of the comments that have been made about some of the division that's emerged here. I have said repeatedly and will continue to say, we are one Minnesota. We cannot pit mode against mode and region against region. And I'm disappointed that that's what we've done in this bill through the cuts to Metro Transit and again, we've had a lot of discussion about light rail, and as I've said, sometimes it gets lost that we're also impacting the local bus service, the workhorse of the system here in the metro, and we're also not able to complete bus rapid transit lines that have bipartisan support. I'm very disappointed in that. We don't have funding for the Orange Line and the Gold Line in this bill. So, Mr. Chair, I stand ready to assist moving forward. I laid out last week briefly some of my ideas for a compromise, some thoughts I have to get to yes. As you have said, no one will, you know, when we get to yes, when we can vote bipartisanly for a bill like this, people will have to give some things up. Not everyone will be happy, but I do stand, you know, ready to assist you as you enter into the next phase, which is likely some negotiations with the executive branch. So I hope that we can get to yes. I think we're a long way away from there with this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein, and thank you to all the members of the committee, both sides of the table. We've been working hard. We put together a substantial transportation bill. That's what my goal was from the beginning, and we have attained that goal. It may not be a perfect bill, but it is substantial. I don't think you can argue with that. I just think it's, you know, this discussion about general fund versus dedicated funds is one that will be ongoing. I realize it didn't end today. I didn't have any imagination that it would. But we need to remember that all these funds come from our taxpayers' pockets, whether they're dedicated funds or not. And while we describe dedicated funds as being stable and dependable, they aren't. When the economy turns down, dedicated funds turn down too. It's not like they're guaranteed to be there dollar for dollar. It just doesn't work that way. When the economy turns down, people buy less gas. We get less money into the gas tax fund. So while I appreciate the desire for dedicated funds, I've really been asking myself the question, have dedicated funds in Minnesota helped us effectively fund transportation over time? And I honestly don't think they have. I think they've in some ways made it more difficult for the Transportation Committee to get its work done. I asked staff to take a look around the country and see what other states are doing. There are 35 other states that utilize the general fund as part of their transportation funding. 35 other states, some of them in the billions of dollars, where they're using general fund dollars to fund transportation. You know, when you spend a dollar on the road doesn't really care where it came from. The road cares if it got built or not. The next thing I would talk about is borrowing. You know, there are some states in this country that borrow every dollar they spend on roads. I don't think that's appropriate, and we've been careful here in Minnesota to avoid borrowing all the funds we need for transportation. I agree with that. But our bill, compared to the governor's, is virtually identical in the amount of bonding. It's resourced a little differently, but the governor's looking for $1.2 billion over 4 years, and we're looking for $1.3 billion over 4 years. Not a dramatic difference. So I just have pledged myself in the beginning to working hard and trying to keep my eye on the prize, and the prize to me is a substantial transportation bill that is passed and signed by the governor. But frankly, it's not easy work, folks. The history of transportation bills in the state of Minnesota is not very pretty. So I'm just asking all of us to continue to work to move this effort forward. I believe the citizens of Minnesota are demanding it. They're not just asking for a transportation bill. They're demanding a transportation bill. And it behooves all of us to keep working to get that to happen. I guarantee it won't be easy. I can't guarantee that it will be successful, but I guarantee it will not be easy. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 861 be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you, members. House File 861 is on its way to taxes. With that, members, we are adjourned.